2. Can I have part 1? जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 10 महाराज रहुगण मीट्स जड़ भारत टेक्स्ट्स 7 डज नॉट हैव अ पर्पोर्ट सो ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ट्रांसलेशन फॉर 7 Thereafter, when the king saw that his palanquin was still being shaken by the carriers, he became very angry and said, "You rascal, what are you doing? Are you dead despite the life within your body? Do you not know that I am your master? You are disregarding me and not carrying out my order. For this disobedience, I shall now punish you just as Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, punishes sinful people. I shall give you proper treatment so that you will come to your senses and do the correct thing." Text 8. Thinking himself as a king, King Rahugana was in the bodily conception and was influenced by material nature's mode of passion and ignorance. Due to madness, he chastised Jadabharata with uncalled for. and contradictory words. Jadabharat was a topmost devotee and the dear abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although considering himself very learned, the king did not know about the position of an advanced devotee situated in devotional service, nor did he know his characteristics. Jadabharata was the residence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He always carried the form of the Lord within his heart. He was the dear friend of all living beings, and he did not entertain any bodily conception. He therefore smiled and spoke the following words, which we'll leave for tomorrow. Purport. The distinction between a person in the bodily conception and a person beyond the bodily conception is presented in this verse. In the bodily conception, King Rahugana considered himself a king and chastised Jadabharata in so many unwanted ways. Being self-realized, Jadabharat, who was fully situated on the transcendental platform, did not at all become angry. Instead, he smiled and began to deliver his teachings to King Rahugana. A highly advanced Vaishnava devotee is a friend to all living entities, and consequently he is a friend to his enemies also. In fact, he does not consider anyone to be his enemy. Suhruda sarvadehinam. Sometimes a Vaishnava becomes superficially angry at a non-devotee, but this is good for the non-devotee. We have several examples of this in Vedic literature. Once, Narada became angry with the two sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, and he chastised them by turning them into trees. The result was that later they were liberated by Lord Sri Krishna. The devotee is situated on the absolute platform, and when he is angry or pleased, there is no difference, for in either case he bestows his benediction. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. First of all, we have a big wedding party here, so I'd like to welcome all to the Hare Krishna temple here. We have been studying from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, the story of a very great person by the name Maharaj Bharata. It is after this person that the country got named, or the whole planet got named as Bharatavarsha. And so to hear about, like in India or even here, we have streets that are named after certain persons. And it's nice to know a little history behind why such a person was a great person. So we read about, I guess, commonly great people in our history books. And we read about exceptionally great people in our Vedic histories. Puranas are histories. And this is the life of Maharaj Bharat during the reign of a very early Manu. So just a sidebar is, in one day of Brahma, which lasts 4,320,000,000 years, 14 Manus come and go. Manus are like the universal administrators. And during the 14 Manus, different personalities, their histories are recorded in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Bhagavatam records, in one day of Manu, this particular day that's happening, what all happened during that time, and how Lord Krishna appeared during Vaivaswata Manu's reign. So seven Manus have already gone, six have gone. This is the period of the seventh Manu. And in every Manu's time, there are 71 Yuga cycles. So one Yuga cycle is Satya Yuga, Dvapara, Treta and Kali. And together they are 4,320,000 years. 71 such cycles is one period of Manu, a period of one Manu. So we are in the 28th Yuga cycle of Vaivaswata Manu, who is the seventh Manu. So it's like, roughly you could say it's the afternoon of Lord Brahma, just about noon of Lord Brahma, in this particular day. And this day is called Shweta Varaha Kalpa. And our Lord Brahma is said to be around 50 years old of his age. So his whole life lasts for 311 trillion years. So we've gone through 150 trillion so far in this creation. 150 trillion years still left. And so during this Manu, particular Manu, not Vaivaswata, but a previous Manu, Maharaj Bharat appeared. And he was a very, very, very great devotee of Krishna. And unfortunately, he got attached to a small deer. And he thought he should take care of that deer. He left all his devotional practices to take care of the deer. And at the time of death, he was only thinking about the deer. So in Bhagavad Gita, there's a very important principle that says, at the time of death, whatever is the composition of our consciousness, the next life that we will get will be according to that consciousness. So at time of death, if somebody is thinking about relatives or money or something, some unfulfilled desire, then the next life will be a body that will be suitable to fulfill that desire. So the idea is to cultivate one's life in such a way that when the actual time comes, time of death, that one is thinking about Lord Narayana. The Bhagavatam says, Ante Narayana Smriti. So to think of Lord Narayana at the end is not some happenstance, oh, I can just think about Narayana. It is discussed that one should cultivate one's life in such a way that we remember that. And generally, we remember those who we are attached to, right? We remember those that we love and we have affection for, who have meaning in our lives. So if throughout our life, we lead our lives in such a way that Krishna is neither an important person or someone that we care about or has meaning in our life, then to remember such a person would be very difficult. Like, we've traveled by bus or plane, right, in the past years. Do we remember everyone we met? No, because we don't care for them. Someone sits next to us. In fact, even the persons who sat next to us, we may actually exchange email addresses, phone numbers. They may even become friends on Facebook. But at the time of our death, we will not remember them, because they don't have meaning for us. So if Krishna or God doesn't have meaning for us throughout life, to remember him at the time of death is impossible. And to remember Krishna is important because the next life will be with him versus something else, some other species of life. There are 8,400,000 species, and we have passed through all of them somehow or the other. Insects, plants, animals, birds, aquatics, human beings. We have, from one life to another life, one life to another life. And this is called samsara cycle, from one birth to another birth. So the human form of life awards us the special gift that we have the ability to break this cycle. And this cycle is broken by becoming connected to or in relationship to Krishna. Because then at the time of death, one will remember Krishna. And Krishna says, one who remembers me, antakale cha mam eva smaran muktva kalevaram. At the time of death, one who thinks of me, mam eti, he comes to me, asamshaya, without a doubt. Unfortunately, Bharat Maharaj forgot that, although he remembered it throughout his life. So one lesson is to not take it for granted. Ah, now I am a devotee, I will remember Krishna very easily. So not to take it for granted. So in his next life, he became a deer. But because he was a special personality, Krishna gave him the consciousness or remembrance from his previous life. Now, we don't remember what we were in our previous life. That was nice, thankfully. Most likely I was a cockroach, and I don't want to remember that, or something. So it's good to not remember in one sense. But in his case, because he was a devotee of Krishna, Krishna gave him memory from previous life so he can remember, whoa, I don't want to make that mistake again. So as a deer, although he was in the body of a deer, his consciousness was that of a sage. And so the deer life, he didn't squander it, he didn't waste it. And in the next life, he is born as, again, Jada Bharata. Jada means dull, like crazy. And so this life, he wants to make sure that he is not going to make any such mistakes. And he acts in the most unconventional ways. Most people, they like to go to school, get some education, dress nicely, speak nicely. But he didn't care for all that. He said, I don't want to get involved in worldly things. So he never spoke. Not a word. He never made his hair. He never took a bath. He never ate anything. If someone fed him something, he would eat. Otherwise, that was not a consideration. He did everything opposite to what his father told him to do. Father told him, you should go to the bathroom, then clean yourself. He first cleaned himself and then went to the bathroom. Just intentionally did everything opposite so that people will neglect him. Sure, useless case. And that way he would not be bothered. And his consciousness was fixed on Krishna throughout the time. In our lineage of acharyas, there is Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji was very popular. And every day people would come to him and say, Maharaj, give me blessings. Maharaj, give me blessings. Give me blessings. So he was like, my gosh, these people only want blessings, but they don't want anything spiritual. Most time when people say, give me blessings, they mean, give me blessings to get something material. Like in India, for a young girl, they will say, Shigrameva Kalyana Praptarastu. Of course, the girls don't like it, the parents love it. Or get a job, get something, some such material benediction. So Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, man, these people are disturbing me too much. So he decided to go chant his rounds inside public latrine, where it is very smelly. At that time in India, public latrine is pretty gross. I mean, it's gross even now. But so then when he was sitting inside there and chanting peacefully, he was not disturbed by the circumstances. No one else came to him because it was too smelly. Like, who will go there like that? So there are persons who would be so outside the norms of social behavior and etiquette because they are not, which is the important point here, they are not in the bodily conception of life. Bodily conception means the moment we are asked the question, who are you? It depends on what answer we give. That's what is the bodily conception of life. For example, if someone were to ask us, who are you? Most likely we'll give a name and we'll identify that I'm from India, or I am a man or a woman, depending on the case. I am from such and such family. These are all designations of the body. But if you ask a sage, who are you? The first answer they will give is, I am a servant of Krishna. Because it's not about this body. This body was born in such and such family, such and such country, with whatever karmic makeup that I had. And that is called the bodily conception. To think that I am this body. This is the first, blunder or mistake that common people or ordinary people make. I am this body. I am Indian. When I make this presentation at colleges, the first thing we talk about is when you meet someone and they seem to be from your country, the first thing you'll ask is, are you from India? Yes, yes. Oh, very good. We feel very happy. Then we ask them, North India or South India? If they say South India, we become even more happy. Oh, very nice, very nice. Where, Andhra or Tamil Nadu or something? And they say Andhra Pradesh. Oh, we become even more happy. Then we ask them, Godavari district, Krishna district, which one? Oh, Godavari. Oh, very good, very good. East or West? We try to narrow it down to so much to feel like, oh, I'm your cousin. Oh, that's fantastic. Because we identify with the body. The body is, you know, I'm such and such from so particular place. So the bodily conception brings about a sense of identity. This is called false ego. I have an identity. I'm Indian. I'm proud to be an Indian. I'm American, you know. Be proud to be an American, like that. But this is not our identity, because in our previous life, we were perhaps not Indian or American, or even man or woman. We were something else, perhaps. So our identity keeps changing from one life to another life. But the identity that doesn't change at all is that I am a spiritual living entity. I am soul. Aham Brahmasmi. And that is true regardless. And we understand from Vaishnava literature that Aham Brahmasmi is also not a sufficient identity. The correct identity is, I am a part and parcel of Krishna. So our relationship with Krishna is that of, we are a servant of Krishna. Gopi Bhartur Padakamalayor Dasa Dasa Anudasa. Gopi Bharta means one who is the maintainer of the gopis, Krishna. And we are the Dasa Dasa Anudasa, the servant of the servant of the servant. Because if one thinks, I am soul, I am Brahman, then we might get confused that the personality of Godhead is also called Brahman sometimes. So we may think, oh, I am God. We cannot be God. God cannot have back pain, tooth pain, diabetes, etc. That's the body. So when Bharat Maharaj, as Jada Bharata was moving around, people thought he was like retarded. So they took advantage of him, even his own brothers. They mistreated him. They gave him burnt rice, stale food and all that. And he never complained. This is the unique nature of such a person. He never complained. He never said anything. And then one day he was found on the streets by some dacoits who wanted to do a human sacrifice. So they found him and they said, oh, he looks very strong. He'll be perfect for human sacrifice. And they brought him there, bathed him, put nice oil, sandalwood paste, put him garlands, tilak, and put his head on the chopping block and were ready to chop his head off. They wanted to make an offering to Bhadrakali, thinking when Kali will drink that blood, she will bless the chief of the dacoits with a son. This is all made up stuff. There's no such ceremony, but they made it up. Well, India is full of made up ceremonies. People generally make up their own ceremonies. Because somewhere, few generations ago, someone thought, oh, this will be a nice addition to do. And like that, they become family traditions. But actually, those ceremonies might not even be in the Vedas. So I'll pause here and tell you a sidebar story. There was a king. And the king was ready to go on a hunting trip. So one day when he went on a hunting trip, he fell off the horse and his middle finger had broken. So he came back in great pain. And all his ministers, naturally, who were all flattering, and they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry to see that your finger is broken. Oh, you know, please accept our, condolences or whatever, just that your finger is broken." Except one minister. He said, "Oh, finger's broken? Maybe something good will happen from it." So the king got very upset. He said, "You rascal, everyone is being so sympathetic. You're being so nonchalant about it. Put him in jail." Then the king went out again. And this time he was ambushed by a few dacoits. And the dacoits wanted to offer to Bhadrakali someone from royal lineage. So they also captured the king and they put his head on the chopping block and they were ready to chop his head off when one of the persons said, "Hey, wait. You can't kill him." "Why?" "Oh, his finger is broken. Bhadrakali will not accept, not a perfect offering. This offering is defective. You can't kill him. She will become upset." So they said, "Oh, thank you for letting me know." And they let the king go. So the king got very happy. He's like, "Wow, my life was saved because my finger was broken." So the minister was right. So he came back home and he asked his guards to release the minister. And he said, "Now I understand why you said something good might come from the broken finger." He said, "But I have a question for you. My finger was broken, it brought me good. But you were in jail. How did it bring you any good?" So the minister replied, "I'm usually accustomed to going with you, right? So this time I didn't go with you. So when they released you, the next person they would have caught was with me. So this way when I was in jail, I got saved from my head being chopped off." So a person who's not in the bodily conception, for them, they have the consciousness to figure out that everything has a purpose. But those who are in the bodily conception of life, they cannot see purpose behind what is happening in life. So they protest. They complain. "Why is it like this? Why is it not like that? I wish it were like this. I wish my life was not like that. I wish I had not married this man. I wish I had not married this woman. My life would have been very different." Or however, people generally complain or they don't like the way things manifest for themselves. But Jarabharata was not like that. He did not protest when his head was being cut off or about to being cut off. Then Bhadrakali came out of the deity form because she didn't want to see a great devotee of Krishna being offended. So she chopped off the heads of all the dacoits. And we read that she and her fellow dancers, they danced around the heads, threw the heads of the dacoits and played with them like they were balls and drank their blood and ha 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 laughed and all that. So Jarabharata walked away from there. They sat by a river and the king's palanquin carriers, they found him. They said, "Oh, looks strong and young. We should take him to the service because our palanquin carrier, one of them is missing." So there are three palanquin carriers and the fourth is Jarabharata. But Jarabharata, when he's walking, he's looking for ants so he doesn't step on an ant. So he would wait and then take a step. Then he would wait and then take another step. Now that doesn't make it well for a coordinated four persons carrying the palanquin. So Maharaj Rahugana had a little rough ride. So he didn't like that. So in the previous verses, he asks his palanquin carriers, "What's happening?" So they said, "Oh, you know, this new guy is new on the job." So, okay, tell him to carry the palanquin properly. But Jarabharata continued, being conscious of not wanting to step on an ant. So Maharaj Rahugana becomes sarcastic. He says, before this verse, he has still sarcasm, right? He says, "Oh, how troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued. So whatever I'm reading, it's the opposite of it. Sarcasm means you say something nicely, say something bad nicely. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have carried this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance." So basically he's saying, why the heck are you so tired? You're not the only one carrying this palanquin and you haven't even gone any far distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. He's very young and strong. We're saying, oh, you must be so old. My dear friend, this is not a friend, I see that you're not very firm, nor very strong and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you? In this way, the king criticized Jadabharata with sarcastic words. Yet, despite being criticized this way, Jadabharata had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with the lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. So this body is a composition of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. And three subtle elements: mind, intelligence, and false ego. And generally we think we are these things. It's like wearing a coat and saying, I am Ralph Lauren coat. We are not the coat. Of course, when the coat tears, we do cry as if our hand is broken or something. Because we identify with it. This is who I am. But Jadabharata didn't care whatever he said. Now this is a quality to cultivate. Generally, when people say something, we become very reactive. We react to praise. When someone praises us, we become very happy. When someone criticizes us, we become very upset or angry. In fact, in Kali Yuga, somebody doesn't even have to criticize us. They may say something which they don't mean it, but we interpret that as criticism and we become angry, even if they didn't say something. Because one of the characteristics of Kali Yuga is that we fight for nothing. Fight for the least of things. I often joke that between husband and wife, this is the best example of how we're doing, because wife and husband, that dynamic is very volatile. One day the wife would cook something and the husband will eat and say, there's not enough salt in this today. That's where it all begins. So she will say, instead of saying, oh really, here's some more salt, he'll say, you never appreciate what I do. And he will say, you never know how to do things for me. You never care for me. Then it escalates into, your family is always like this. And then he will respond with, don't tell me about your family. Look at your own family. From there on, it goes on to 15 years ago, what happened in the life families. You know, when we were getting married, your uncle said something like that. And suddenly, for a little salt, they go back 15 years, and it becomes a massive fight. Because it was just something, because it's all there, the sensitivity of the bodily conception is there. Someone tells us, you're not good. Oh, that's such a thing to hold on to. It's so difficult to deal with that. But one who's free of bodily conception does not get affected. Krishna describes this multiple times in the Bhagavad Gita. Mana apamana yoho. Whether one is being respected or disrespected, one is not affected by it. But we get affected because we think, oh. And in this case, today's verses, now from sarcasm he's gone to anger. This anger arises from pride. So pride, by definition, means a false sense of identity. Becoming attached to or feeling great from a false sense of identity. He thinks, I am the king and I should be served. And when that is not happening, he is upset, he is angry. Because he's seeing the world as, I am the king, these are my servants, palanquin carriers. And their duty is to make my life comfortable. Now, Jada Bharata is not thinking like that. So Prabhupada says, the distinction between a person in the bodily conception and one free from it is being discussed in these verses. Jada Bharata is not thinking, I am a servant, I am a palanquin carrier. He is thinking, I am a spirit soul. I am not this body. And Rahugana is thinking, I am this body. So the conversation between the two is very disconnected. Of course, Jada Bharata hasn't spoken yet. He has not spoken in his entire life yet. So he is now angry, saying, I am going to punish you, just the way Yamaraj punishes sinful persons. So pride is such a quality that the manifestation of it comes out as arrogance. And the next level or degree of pride beyond arrogance is violence. So it's described that if a proud person is not properly humbled, like they say, before the fall, right? Pride comes before the fall. That pride manifests as arrogance. And that arrogance comes from the pride comes from the idea that I am, and you fill in the blank, something. I am rich, I am powerful, I am the king, I am very well educated, or I am strong, I am the master, etc. So when a person is dealing with such pride, then they start seeing distinctions automatically. The distinction that I am better than the others. In whatever way, they identify myself as better than others. There is the other side of pride, where one sees oneself worse than others. That's also pride, because still on the bodily conception. I'm useless. I have absolutely no skill. I'm not educated. I'm very poor. These things are also coming from pride, but not the arrogance type pride. So Maharaj Rahugana, because he's suffering from this pride, and he's the leader or the king, he needs to be rectified. Because when there is pride, it polarizes a community, or it polarizes a person's view of things, ours and theirs. When Prahlad Maharaj is speaking to Hiranyakashipu, he describes this, that is, because of bodily conception, we start seeing people as my friends and my enemies. And that kind of consciousness is because of the bodily conception or pride. And carrying pride in the heart is like carrying a 600-pound bag on our shoulder. In the beginning, it might seem all nice. Oh, I'm so strong, I can carry this bag. But later it becomes a big burden. And it's something that you can't just drop. You can't decide, from today, I will not be proud. What happens is about 2 hours later, I have not been proud at all. I am really humble now. That is also pride. Look how humble I am. So the only way to become free of pride is when the heart is naturally transformed. And a person's heart cannot transform unless there is Vaishnava Seva. Vaishnava Seva means when we meet a devotee of Krishna, to render them some service is the beginning of the heart becoming soft. It's not just one time we did some service. Oh, that's good. But to continuously soften the heart, one must become eager to serve the Vaishnavas. If we eagerly serve anyone else, it's not possible to become free of pride. So what is so unique about the Vaishnavas? Vaishnavas, here in the purport Prabhupada writes, in the verse that's described, Vaishnavas carry Vishnu in their heart. Of course, Vishnu is there for everyone. Paramatma is in everyone's heart. Every human, every species of life has Paramatma in their heart. But the only difference is that for a Vaishnava, they've realized it, or they've recognized that Vishnu is in the heart. And when we serve the Vaishnavas, then that is the way that the real, genuine humility manifests within our heart. There's a prayer by one of our Vaishnava Acharyas, Govinda Das. He says, Tumara Hridaye Sada Govinda Vishram. That the Lord Govinda is resting or relaxing in the devotee's heart. And Govinda Kahe Vaishnava Mora Pran. That my life is my devotees. So when Krishna sees that we are serving the Vaishnavas, he becomes very pleasantly disposed towards us, more than serving him directly. I'll end with the story of one of the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas. His name was Shailapurna. Shailapurna was in Kanchipuram. In Kanchipuram, there is a deity of Krishna by the name Varadaraja. Varadaraja means the king of blessing givers. Varada means to give a blessing. And Raja is the king. He would give all sorts of blessings to his devotees. And the deity of Varadaraja was so unique that he would have conversations with Shailapurna every day. How is this devotee doing? How is that devotee doing? Is everyone happy like that? We can't speak to Kishore Kishore. We can speak to Kishore Kishore. Kishore Kishore don't speak back to us. And even if they are, we are clueless. But Lord Varadaraj would speak with Shailapurna. And Shailapurna had a very special service that he would fan Varadaraj every day with a peacock fan. One day a devotee, a simple devotee, met Shailapurna and asked him, since you have such a nice relationship with Varadaraj, can you please ask him when I will come back to Vaikuntha? He said, oh sure, I can ask for you. So as he was fanning the Lord, he asked, my dear Lord, such and such devotee has a question as to when he will come back to Vaikuntha. So Varadaraj said, oh, he is very intimate with you, Shailapurna. He is very dear. He serves you very nicely. So after this lifetime, he is coming back to Vaikuntha. Please let him know. Oh, yes, sure. And then he had a doubt. He said, I have a doubt. Will I come back to Vaikuntha after this life? So Lord Varadaraj said, actually, no. So I was a little surprised. What do you mean, actually, no? He said, well, you have this wonderful service. You fan me very nicely every day. You sing to me, and I speak with you. But something is missing in your life. The component of serving the Vaishnavas, that's not there. So to enter Vaikuntha, you have to be a servant of the Vaishnavas. Really? He put the fan down, and he went away. He went away to serve the Vaishnavas. And He didn't want, of course, he was very well known. So he changed his appearance. He removed his Vaishnava tilak, put on simple clothes, and went to far away to Mahapurna's house and begged, "Can I please get some service to do?" So Mahapurna looked at him and said, "Oh, okay, you can be in the cow stable or in the barn, taking care of the cows, wash the cows every day, take them out for grazing. Very, very menial service." In fact, we heard from Bhakti Purushottam Maharaj, like the dullest of service, like the most unintelligent service is to take care of the cows. Of course, they're very great, but if you don't have even an ounce of intelligence, okay, take care of the cows. So he was given such a service. And he didn't say, "I am Shalapurna, what are you talking?" No, he said, "Very good, fine." And every day, for 6 months, he took care of the cows very nicely. One day it rained very heavily. And so Mahapurna thought, "Oh, that person who's taking care of the cows, he must be all wet. He may not have clothes. Let me take something for him so he can wear, put on dry clothes." And when he entered the barn, Shailapurna had taken out his cowherd clothes, and because he didn't have anything else, he put on his Vaishnava clothes, proper dhoti and full tilak, Vaishnava tilak, you know, 12 parts of the body. And generally when you put tilak like that, the body seems all effulgent and radiant. And when Mahapurna walked in, he was stunned to see someone. He said, "Who are you? Who are you? Tell me." He insisted, so he said, "My name is Shailapurna." Mahapurna fell down with a shock. "Like, you're one of the greatest devotees in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. And why are you doing something so menial here, taking care of the cows?" He said, "No, I had to do some service for you." And, "Oh, no, no, stop all this, stop all this." And he fired him from the job. He said, "No, no, you cannot do this. I cannot make you take care of cows like this." So Shailapurna returned back to Kanchipuram to go back to his service of fanning the Lord, because no one else would give him such menial service. So when he started fanning Varadaraj, Varadaraj said to him, "Now you can come back to Vaikuntha, because you served the Vaishnavas." So to remove that pride is very, very essential. Otherwise we'll be stuck in this bodily conception. "I am something. I am something of value." Actually, this material body has no value. It is earth, water, fire, air, and ether. In our college presentations, we show a slide that says, let's look at the composition of the body. Yeah, it has so many grams of carbon. That's value, so many dollars. It has so much composition of water, and this is the value of water, market price of water. It has iron, magnesium, phosphorus, sulfur, whatever is the composition of the body. And if you add up all the materials at market prices, the value of the body is about $20. If you add up all the water, the iron, magnesium, calcium, everything that's in the body, it's a whopping $20. But how much value we give it to it, give the body, as if it's priceless. It's the most priceless thing that we own. In fact, sometimes our computers are more expensive than our body. But between the computer and body, we value the body more. Or the car. A car is $20,000. But if there is an accident, we don't ask, "How's the car?" We ask the person, "How are you? First, are you okay?" "Gone with the car, it's okay. You're okay, that's more important for me." Of course, some people might not say like that. They'll say, "How's the car? You're okay." So we give more value to the human body, although from a dollar perspective, it's only $20 worth. Why? Because it's the soul within the body that's the valuable one. But we do it unconsciously. We're not conscious that this is the soul that's the valuable one. It's life, because if the soul is not there, that body has no use. As long as there is soul in the body, We are very friendly to that body. Oh, I love you very much. And we sing songs, we write poetry, we embrace and we kiss and we do all things. But as soon as the soul leaves that body, we can't do the same things with the body. We have to bury it or cremate it. We can't say, don't take the body, keep it here. This is my beloved. And that beloved will be rotting, disintegrating day by day. So it's the value for the soul. So as long as our attention is on the body, then our understanding of who we are goes away. Or we have a wrong understanding of who we are. So right from the beginning in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the introduction to spiritual life, Krishna brings our attention to the value of the soul and very little value for the body. Not that the body has no value. The body has value as long as we honor the soul within the body. If we don't honor the soul within the body doesn't have much meaning because it's going to die very soon. So Maharaj Rahugana doesn't understand this, and therefore he is chastising Jadabharata. And Jadabharata is going to speak back and give him some strong lessons. So we'll stop here. Tomorrow he's going to speak, Jadabharata. Any questions, comments, anything from this side? Questions, comments? Ashraya, Prabhu? Is it working? There's still out of battery. Good. What's the understanding that he took a form, birth again? Well, he had to go from bhava stage to prema stage. And so this form of life as Jadabharata is that final stages of development of his Krishna consciousness. Like the full maturity. Another is we could assume safely is he had to instruct Jadabharata, instruct Maharaj Rahugana. Because until now he has just been quiet for years and years and years, not spoken a word. But he instructs the king. So there is purpose in that. In the beginning of this pastime, we had read and heard that when Krishna does these things with such devotees, it is to deepen the tie of affection further. So that's what's happening. The intensity to want to go back to Godhead, to make this life successful, is becoming very, very strong in this life. And it's very pleasing to Krishna to see that intensity. So he has facilitated such intensity. Imanshu? Yes. Yes. Emptiness. Yeah. It is also bodily conception of life. The emptiness, the low self-esteem, these are also bodily conceptions of life. It is also pride. It's the other side, the shadow side of pride. It's also Vaishnava Seva. Because by serving Vaishnavas, we begin to understand our real self-worth. Our real self-worth is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Mamaivamsha jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatanaha. That first two lines of that verse gives us our real self-worth. We're not some, you know, product of matter. We are parts and parcels of Krishna. Mama eva amsha. And that is glorious. But we don't recognize it, either due to pride that manifests this way or the shadow of pride that manifests the other way, is given in the next two lines. Mana sashtani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. It's because of the mind and the senses that a living entity is suffering or struggling within the material world. Karshati means struggles. Because the mind tells us, oh, you're so great, or you're so useless. But either way, we're neither this nor that. We are parts and parcels of Krishna. We are spiritual beings, sat, chit, ananda, vigrahas. But we lead a life of asat, achit, and complete nirananda. But we are always pursuing ananda. We don't have it. We are always pursuing it. And we become happy only because there is a promise. Oh, if you do this, in the future, you'll be very happy. Very nice. And we pursue that happiness. But we don't experience it. So it's still Vaishnava Seva, because Vaishnava Seva brings us to the conception of who we really are. Of course, I'm emphasizing Vaishnava Seva. As important is chanting of Krishna's names. Because without chanting and Vaishnava Seva, they go together. Only then is Cheto Darpana Marjanam. The consciousness becomes cleansed. The wrong conceptions go away only when there is chanting. And for chanting to really get established, the ground required is Vaishnava Seva. A person who doesn't serve the Vaishnavas and only chants, like the, for example, there's nothing to, foothold is not there. And for a person who is only doing Vaishnava Seva but not chanting, nothing sprouts from it. Both are necessary. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.